from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about a gallery exhibit for very young collectors.
I'll get a preview of what Clues Hall is offering late this winter and for the spring.
And I'll take a look at what the theater program at Marion is up to. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Just on the heels of a show of very small art, the Arts Council has now organized a show for small collectors, as in very young collectors. The Young Collectors Show will feature work at Gallery 924 that is curated for kids. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Arts Council of Indianapolis' Vice President Shannon Linker about the show.
Shannon, thanks for coming to Art of the Matter today. Great to see you.
Thanks, Travis. Great to see you, too.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So I'm sensing kind of a theme, whether it's intentional or not. The 924 Gallery, Gallery 924, just finished the tiny show with very small art, and now you're doing a show with very small collectors?
Is that right? Right. There is a theme. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but you're right.
So tell me about the Young Collectors Show, because it is a show based on kids, right?
It is. And a lot of people, when I first started talking about this show to artists to try to get them interested in showing work, they were a little confused, thinking, oh, it's going to be kids' art?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's actually going to be your art, professional artist work that is amazing and wonderful and interesting. But it's going to be installed and curated, selected with children in mind.
Okay.
Because the idea, of course, is that we want children, and in this case, we've kind of just arbitrarily picked 3 to 12-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the idea is that we want those young children to be comfortable coming into a gallery.
Mm-hmm.
We want their parents to be comfortable thinking that, well, you know, it can be a date night. It can be a thing where mom and dad go out on their own, but it can also be something where you can bring your children and they can feel comfortable in going into a gallery and looking at art and learning about art and talking about art and meeting artists and all the fun things that can happen when
mm-hmm.
you go to an art show.
So I know at one point, and we had talked about this last year, and you were telling me a little bit about it, and you were even thinking about like hanging the work low. Did you do that? Is that part?
Yes,
yeah.
That is one of the things that we'll do.
Okay.
So
that's really cool.
That is something that in my daughter, who is 5,
mm-hmm.
who makes a lot of art herself, and in my office, I have one of her paintings, and I wanted her to know that it was there, and I wanted mm-hmm. her to be able to see it when she comes in. So I hung it right at her eye level, and I thought, wow, well, why wouldn't I just do that for the whole show, kids will feel comfortable? They'll know that it's for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they come in, and we have some kids come in for our regular First Friday openings and things like that. But usually they'll be stretching their necks up to look and to see
right.
what it is. And mom or dad will have to pick them up and so they can see. And so they always feel like, well, this isn't really for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of just here, just, you know, I'll go sit in the corner and get on my iPad or whatever.
Right.
And so we definitely wanted them to think and to know that it really was for them. And we want them to look at the art. And so we're going to put it all at about eye level for a 5 or 6-year-old.
Yeah.
And so we're also creating a coloring book based on some of the artwork.
Okay.
And I know that coloring books are
the hip thing
right now for adults, but this is not for adults.
I don't actually
kids.
Think coloring books have ever gone out of style for kids. So.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So how did you, first off, choose the artist for the show?
Well, when I sent out the call, I wasn't really sure.
Okay.
I basically told the artist, we're not talking down to children.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to gather something that they would be intrigued by and find interesting and be drawn to. But I can't really tell you what that is. I'll know when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was we got in a lot of different things, and some things were kind of obviously for kids that were maybe animals or something like that, and that wasn't really where we were going.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started seeing some other things that were just really graphic, that were really colorful and bold. Some things were really whimsical. And it just started to pull itself together based on a few really key, interesting pieces.
I would imagine very colorful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. Now, there's a few that are just really kind of graphic black and white drawings.
Hmm.
So, but a lot of them are very colorful. And you know, we're kind of taking a chance. It's an experiment.
Yeah.
Because I know what my daughter likes, but I don't know what everyone, all these kids like. So we'll find out what they're drawn to and what they like.
Now Gallery 924 is part of the Arts Council, and the Arts Council of Indianapolis, located on Pennsylvania Street. Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania. And a great, great gallery space. And part of your real mission is to focus on local artists and Indianapolis artists and to show them. And so I'm curious, you know, a lot of these artists, you know, what was their response when you sent out this call to them?
Well, actually, a lot of them...
A lot of them are parents, right?
Exactly, right, yes. A lot of them are, and they fell in love with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
They were so excited. They immediately said, well, here's what I could do, and I can make small prints, and I can do this. And they were just thinking of all of these fun things they could do for the kids. And so the day after the opening reception, we're having a family day, kind of play date on
mm-hmm.
the 6th. And so some of the artists will be there, doing book readings and doing art activities with the kids based on their art and all of that. So they were all just really excited. And I guess it is because a lot of them do have kids or nieces and nephews,
yeah,
or, you know, and a lot of them teach also,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so the idea that something that's really important to them, showing work in a gallery and how they make their living, they don't always get to share with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of was that opportunity for them.
Now, it is called the Young Collectors Show, and obviously part of the mission of Gallery 924 is to promote and sell the art of these local artists. So are things priced so that kids could buy them, or is it more priced so that their parents could buy them for the kids?
Well, there's both.
Okay.
There are...
I mean, are we really encouraging young collectors here?
Well, we are. We definitely are. And one of the things that I started off with my daughter is I built her entire, when she was a baby, her entire nursery around one piece of art
mm-hmm.
that I had in my office. And I thought, wow, it's whimsical, it's fun, it's colorful, it's beautiful. That's what I want her to be surrounded by. So I started with that one piece. That's, you know, a decent size, 24 by 36 kind of size. And then from there, we've just been collecting small little fun pieces, usually at Tiny, because everything is affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can buy a piece of art, original art, for $20 to $150.
Right, so, and that was the Tiny show that you guys just
exactly.
had. And what was that, the maybe fourth version of that?
Was Tiny 4,
Tiny
yes.
4, right. And so all the work was very small work, and that was the last show. But, yeah,
right.
so that's, again, there's kind of a
so
theme.
So there are ways to buy art for children and not spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're doing with this is, the hope is that a family will come in and see a painting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the range is probably about 100 to 500,
okay.
maybe,
mm-hmm.
Which is maybe a little bit lower than our normal range.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the artists, not all of them, but a lot of them are creating smaller prints of the pieces available.
Nice.
So if a child really falls in love with one of the images, mm-hmm. but their parents say, well, that's a little bit out of our price range, they could get a print of it for $10, $15, $20.
Right.
So everybody, there will be something for
well, that's
everybody.
Cool. I mean, I just remember when, you know, I was a kid and going to museums and, mm-hmm. and of course my favorite thing was to go to the gift shop at the museum and see if I could find that print of whatever painting I fell in love with.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I would always get the postcards
because I could have
that painting, but mm-hmm. just, you know, my own version.
Exactly.
So that's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I got my first Rothko, you know.
Exactly, me too.
So I can't help but think. So you said that, you know, after the opening night, you'll have this sort of special day for the kids. But the opening night, it is a regular artist First Friday type of opening with wine and
we will
and not
have
just
our
Kool-Aid
and normal wine and beer and some water and juice for the kids. But yeah, it'll be a regular night. It'll just be kind of interesting because instead of adults sitting around, you know, drinking and talking and looking at the art, maybe they'll be out in the lobby and the kids will all be standing around, you know, talking about the art. I hope.
Now, you mentioned your daughter, Sloan. Was she a consultant on this?
She was. She was, yeah. There's a few pieces that she's really excited about, so we may add to her collection, too.
Who are some of the artists that are featured in the Young Collectors Show?
Well, we have a little bit of everything. We have glass, photography, painting. We have an installation, textiles. Cortland Blade is a painter that he's had a solo show with us before. William Denton Ray is a name that a lot of people will recognize. He's doing something. His work, if you're familiar with his work, it's very whimsical anyway, and it's fun and colorful and graphic. And what he's doing a little bit different for this show is he is using his own style, but taking two drawings from his children and recreating their drawings in his style.
What a cool idea.
So, yeah, that was kind of an opportunity for him, too, to do something in his professional world, but relating to his kids. So we have Lois Maine Templeton, who has also had a solo show.
Who's just awesome. Wonderful.
She's a huge
lady.
Name in the in the community and amazing art. And Gautam Rao, who's also had a solo show with us. Mike Lyle also has. There are a lot of people that are coming back from from Tiny and from solo shows that we've had with them in the past.
Very cool. It sounds like a great idea.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, as you said, I know it's an experiment. I'm sure you're curious to see how it turns out. Were there any, you know, when you first brought this idea to the Arts Council, were there any concerns or, you know?
Well, the only concern, I was talking to an artist who actually ended up being in the show, and he said, well, I would hate for parents to come in and feel pressure to buy a $1,000 painting. Mm. Their child just really has to have it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. I want to hear that. And so that's when I encouraged the artist to, let's think about, I don't want you to change your prices for this. The price is what it is for that painting. But if you can do some sort of print or reproduction that we could sell for $10, $15, $20 so the kids could really feel like they have their own art and they can start their own collection, that would be awesome. And so all of them have been open to that, and there's only probably a handful of them that haven't created
That's
something
great.
Like that. So
very neat. Great way to kick off the new year. I know you've got a lot of other shows that are coming up at Gallery 924. Briefly tell me about a couple of the other ones coming up this spring. I know you've got a show, Owens and Crawley, in March.
Right. So Quincy Owens and Luke Crawley, they are artists independently of them, of each other, but they work as an artist team
sometimes. Yes, they do.
Sometimes.
Do some really cool work together.
Very cool. And usually it's public art. So you've probably seen some of their light-based works out and about around town. And so they're going to bring some of those things that they create for as public art into the gallery.
Okay.
So they will be light-based, lots of color, lots of bold shapes and colors, and light and sound as well. So I haven't seen a lot of what they're doing. I think they're working on it right now, getting ready. But it should be really interesting, especially given that it gets dark early and we've got so many windows they're going to be just lit up in there. I think it's going to be beautiful.
It'll look great from the street. And then very cool. That sounds great. Well, lots of great stuff going on at Gallery 924. Really looking forward to the Young Collectors Show. Shannon, thank you so much for coming in Art of the Matter today.
Oh, thank you, Travis. I appreciate it.
Travis DiNicola with the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Vice President Shannon Linker. The Young Collectors Show runs from February 5th to February 26th at Gallery 924, located at, surprise, 924 North Pennsylvania. More information is available at indiearts.org, indiearts.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Butler University's Clues Memorial Hall is welcoming dancers, singers, jazz cats, and more through the second half of their season, as Sharon Gamble recently learned from Clues Hall's James Kramer.
So you've had a chance to take a little bit of a breath between the fall season and the rest of the season.
Yes.
So far, so good?
Oh, gosh, yes. It is such a varied, interesting experience for me personally to get to just work with these different artists when they come in, with community outreach and various activities, but just also to see the breadth of talent that's there and the different art forms and different ways of approaching. And the spring looks to be even more of the same. Mm-hmm. So it's just really exciting.
Fantastic. Speaking of community outreach, when I worked at the Phoenix Theater, it was always so fun that we would have scheduled a play and then a major motion picture would tackle the same thing, the same theme. Mm-hmm. And people would say, oh, did you plan that? And it's like, well, no, we just got lucky. Mm-hmm. Your January 30th concert and event is really fascinating and wonderful timing. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about
yes.
It Gets Better.
Yes, yes. Well, it's... It comes from a few years ago. There were some bullying going on in schools, specifically around gender, and that took off with a YouTube support shout out from various well-known actors, spokespeople, to say it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
It does get better. You just have to live through this. And finding ways to do that. So certainly that has taken off. That was a springboard for and now has become a stage show that we can explore the life of and some situations in that are still relevant in our society. You know, it's unfortunate, but it does continue to go on in various forms. You know, we tackle one thing, we get used to that, then we move on to the next challenge and all. So I think we're going to be seeing some really interesting story that's going to present a topic for conversation. We certainly have a variety of activities around the performance that will be leading into that public conversations and various things. We're going to be working with school groups around the city as well as with the men's and women's choruses here. A variety of different groups that support and work with, from Indiana Youth Group to Health Foundation to the GSAs in the school, variety of different things that are available to help people have a platform for conversation, for better understanding, for better acceptance. And then we can move forward in a much healthier way as supporting one another in society rather than looking at the different or the other as something that's challenging in a way that is frightening.
Right. And so the messages are pertinent to sexual orientation, but also gender identity.
And then back to your topic about or a point about the various things that are now in the media with films,
the
and
the Danish
and theaters.
Girl. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And I think that it is timely.
Mm-hmm.
But yet these projects have all, I mean, I was thinking of the film. I was wondering how long ago they had started that, when it was that they were holding it for release, various types of things like that that come into play. For us, you know, this is a show that's been out for years, various places. And the timing on it for us looking at it was last spring. So it's been almost a year that this came on our radar, that we thought this is something that we feel we need. It aligned right at the time that we were in negotiations with the company when RFRA was hot in the topic here.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we really need to come.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted them to come. And so now we have a week residency for them to, as I say, be very engaged in our community. And then to have this show culminate with our own with the stage performers that come in, as well as then our own local members of our men's and women's chorus with them on stage. So there is a great collaborative effort there as well. So they get to work with, to rehearse with one another through the week, as well as then have these conversations. So there's just so many different ways that we think this is going to be helpful for those people either who are unsure about what this whole thing is about.
Mm-hmm.
Come and find out.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you that are in there working with, whether you're in the school systems or whether you're a person, an individual who is asking these questions personally for their own selves or for their friends or their family, come and learn more about that so that after this finishes, they leave town, our conversation can go on more informed.
Absolutely.
And better prepared to continue encountering people because of things like the films and other theatrical presentations that bring it into your conversation, whether that's at the grocery line or whether that's at your church meetings or you know, at your school PTA meetings. It's going to come up. And if you're more informed, then you're going to be able to be
You'll
a better
have more
spokesperson.
Tools.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What a great way to take the mission of providing entertainment and deepen it and broaden it throughout the community.
And make it something more than just fluff entertainment.
Yeah.
Yes, entertainment is about escape, and we're not there to preach and to ram anything down anybody's throat.
Right.
But here is an opportunity. If you want to come and learn more about it, and it goes back to our mission at Clues of Lifelong Learning.
Yeah.
You're coming to be entertained, but you're going to come away learning something. You're going to come away better informed and better prepared to have an intelligent conversation.
Absolutely. And you've had wonderful luck through the many years of Clues Hall, not just you personally, but you collectively, all of the staff of Clues have had wonderful luck with making a nice balance of well-established companies like Dance Theater of Harlem, which is coming. I'm thinking a lot of people are going to get that in a Valentine's card, an IOU for tickets for that for February 20th.
What a 20th. Wonderful idea.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And yeah, multicultural dance company. You're a dancer. Tell us why, as a dancer, from a dancer's viewpoint, why Dance Theater of Harlem? Why do we want to go see them?
Well, again, a well-established company, established early in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. Arthur Mitchell founded this company to really provide a platform for dancers of minority that were in challenging situations, certainly in Harlem. But as you say, it's a multicultural, so it's not just African-Americans from Harlem. It's now a company that's recognized across the world, and they have dancers from and auditions from all over.
Mm-hmm.
So it is great to have this well-established company, but yet continuing to respond to where we are with dance these days. So there will be, you know, a mix in the rep of some classical, traditional, but also some popular things in terms of music, whether it's an Aretha Franklin or a James Brown or Prince or whatever it may be that they bring to us. Those are all sorts of options on our repertoire list that they're currently in rehearsals
Ooh,
with. So a variety of different things that we could be experiencing there. But I think the crux of it is that this is a company that is well known, that has some great name recognition, that if people have heard of dance companies, this could be one that they have heard of, especially in a ballet company setting.
Right.
And ballet, and we're not going to see a full-length classical from them.
Right.
That's not in their rep now. They have done that in the past. They're not there now. So it's going to be a mixed rep program, which I really like that when we're seeing a company. I know a lot of people like to come and see a title. They like to see a Cinderella or a Coppelia or a Swan Lake or something like that. And those are important to us. But I think when you're seeing a company that is very pared down. It's I think we're at maybe about 8 men, 8 women, something like that. So it's a very compact company, very powerful in that sense, all doing a lot of the work. To see a mixed program, to see their talent and versatility stretched, and for us to hear different kinds of composers and see different choreographers and what they're creating these days, I think that's a real great opportunity for us to get, just like our whole season, a mixed program. That can be very interesting.
Now, from the super well-rehearsed of Dance Theater of Harlem, we go to Broadway's next hit musical, which is never the same in two performances. If you saw it somewhere else,
you won't see that again. Because
right.
It is taken from the audience's involvement. So we encourage people who are going to come to this show, which I have to say, it's one of my favorites I'm looking forward to because it is such a spontaneous improv. And I think I'm interested in certainly what they're going to do, but how they're going to get there.
Yeah.
How are you going to take ideas from the audience and ingest that and turn that around into a show right
before
our eyes?
How big is the company?
About a half dozen folks.
Okay.
So it's going to be some really interesting maneuvering of how they assemble this, how they put it together right before our eyes. This isn't something they're taking suggestions in weeks in advance and they'll come with a prepared show. It's right in front of us.
It's that
very
night.
Improv. Yeah, it's very much musical theater improv. So
wow, that's as a dear late fellow radio announcer friend of mine would say that's practicing without a net.
Yes, you're either going to succeed or fail wildly. It is. But I think it's fun, too, because we're there. We're part of that process as the audience. So it succeeds or fails. We're in it, too. So I think there's something that's humorous about that sometimes. We can laugh at our mistakes. We can learn from those and move on to say, okay, what might have taken us down is actually going to send us on to say, okay, you know what, that didn't play so well. Let's try something else. Sure.
And of course, the principle of improvisation is it's always yes. You say yes to your acting partners. You never say no. We're not going there. You always have to give it a whirl.
Is it the yes and?
Yes and. Uh-huh. You got it. Now, I'm guessing that people who come to see Stomp aren't encouraged to participate, but they often find themselves clapping.
Well, yes. I think there's something about that bass rhythm, percussive quality to this show that is making sounds out of everything that you can get your hands on. That resonates with people. There's something that's primordial about that. I think that we just reach down and we all feel this rhythm, whether it's our heartbeat to begin with, the throbbing in our heads from whatever, you know, whatever it is that we feel internally that has a rhythm to it. I think the same sort of thing here. We feel that and people will be moved by it, whether they actually get up. But I certainly know that people out at intermission, when we've had Stomp in and I've gone to other productions of Stomp in various places, people are doing, making things. They're inspired to do that in their own, you know, with what they've got, their car keys.
Yes, so warning, you know, everything you look at will now become a potential percussive instrument,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes. So I think that is so much fun. That's what keeps it going. I think that's why people are still interested in seeing the show that they may have heard of. It's been around for a while, but it, again, is fresh every time because there's that quality of spontaneity that the performers keep in it. And certainly the audience, in our feedback, we're really liking something, they'll do more of that. For if it's not going over so well, as you say, next.
Next. <Let's move on. laughs> Hey, the Turtle Island Quartet, mm-hmm. For people who aren't familiar, tell us about them.
Well, a classical string quartet in that foundation, and yet they're working in different ways. We've had them in a few years ago. We had them in with Luna Negra. Mm-hmm. So they were here accompanying on stage the Modern Dance Company that was then, you know, based in Chicago. So they have a foundation. They have a very strong foundation. We were able to get them in with our string students through a master class. And it was just really a transformative experience for them to have that hands-on experience with well-trained musicians who are taking that and stretching the ideas of what the instrument can do. And, of course, in this case, working with a jazz pianist and Cyrus Chestnut, what is that going to look like? Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea of bringing these two maybe seemingly very different artists and art forms, classical and jazz, together, I think just is going to prove to be a really interesting program.
And one of the great things, especially if you have young people in your life you want to expose to classical instruments, sometimes it's easier to do that when you're looking at a chamber size group because mm-hmm. the instruments stand out. You can easily differentiate the sounds of mm-hmm. the different instruments, and certainly with a quartet plus piano, that'll be easy to do. Plus, you get two different, rather different art forms with mm-hmm. jazz and mm-hmm. classical.
Yeah,
but if along the same lines, if you have young people in your life and you want them to see somebody super cool, I mean, I think if you look up cool, you'll see Cameron Carpenter's photograph. And he's bringing his international touring organ, which on a recent NPR syndicated program, don't mm-hmm. remember which one, he had a great interview mm-hmm. about that organ whose design he created. Mm-hmm. And what kind of repertoire will he be playing in April? Do we know?
Well, don't have the specific lineup, but the range that he plays is, again, all over the map. So we're going to hear some classical works. Again, I think it's to show what this instrument can do, mm-hmm. what he can do, certainly. I mean, he being the musician is important, but I think it's as much about the International Touring Organ and what it can do and how does it play the various ranges of repertoire. And I think that's what I've researched, it's one of his goals in creating this, which is to have an instrument that could travel, that could play a range of repertoire rather than just being confined to
just church or just theater style.
Right. And realizing that over the time, various organs have shifted and changed. And I think even been designed, so this isn't something new. They've been designed for what they were needed for in that space and in that place. You know, you take and extract that and you start traveling that around, now you're talking about something that has to be very consistent, but also it shows the adaptability of an instrument.
Can't wait to hear that in Clues Hall.
Yes. That's, again, in terms of the acoustics and being able to listen to something of this quality and range. And I think for us, for a lot of us here, it's going to be a stretch to see. And, you know, Cameron's been in our community before. It's isn't his first time here. So hopefully those that have seen him will come back and bring a friend, because we always know that if you are interested in the arts and you bring someone with you, you're going to share that passion. You're probably going to have somebody else then you're going to be able to quickly call up the next time you want to go to something, because you have introduced them to some really wonderful arts.
Sure Gamble with Clues Memorial Hall Community Relations Manager James Kramer. You can learn more about their season and get your tickets at cluesHall.org. That's Clues, C-L-O-W-E-S, hall.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I seem to have extra buffalo wings, pizza, beer.
Stocking up? There's no football this weekend.
Deeply weird.
Yes. Well, it's that weird time between playoffs and Super Bowl, so it's a perfect time to get out and go to lots of arts events that we'll talk about on that calendar we call.
What do we do? So eat your
still get some wings.
Your football snacks and get the protein in, because you're going to need energy for these items. What do you have?
That's a good idea. Ah. Hey, you know, actually, I'm kind of looking forward a bit, I have to admit, to an exhibit at the IMA that I cannot wait for. They're doing an orchid exhibition next month.
Yeah.
Color Me Orchid, and a great way to escape the winter cold. And it opens February 19th, goes through March 13th. And it's going to be the IMA has an incredible orchid collection anyway, and they're going to be displaying even more than are normally out or that you can see at their greenhouse during this time. And then they're also going to have some workshops and a pop-up shop in the main museum, so you can buy orchids as well and talk to experts about growing orchids. So yay, it'll be a lot of fun. Can't wait to attend that.
Lots of beautiful color in a dreary time. Hey, speaking of the IMA, I got a chance to see an exhibit they opened recently that is not getting as much attention as it should. So I'm going to recommend that people go see A Land Enchanted, The Golden Age of Indiana Art.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a fabulous, it's not enormous, but it has some really choice works by painters such as William Merritt Chase, James Buchans, John Washington Love, the Hoosier Group, and others, including some silver work by an artisan called Janet Scudder that's absolutely spectacular. That is at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Again, it's called A Land Enchanted, The Golden Age of Indiana Art, 1877 to 1902. And that show actually hangs through May 14th, so you have a little bit of time. But if you're looking for something to do while you're not watching football, go see it.
There you go. Hey, I don't know what it is about this time of year that brings out weird, creepy, bloody type theater, but
I can't wait to see where we're going with this.
Irma Vep, which is still going, Mystery of Irma Vep, which is still going on at the IRT. And then if you want to head up north, you can go check out Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street at Actors Theater of Indiana, which is such a great, cool, weird musical.
It is.
I mean, those are two kind of bizarre shows that are going on right now.
That's true. Well, yeah. A little bit more mainstream show is on stage at Beef and Board's Dinner Theater right now through February 7th, so you have a little bit of time. It's Run for Your Wife, and it's set in the 1980s, and it is a farce. So you can go from Irma Vep at the IRT to Beef and Boards, from farce to farce. It's about a cab driver called John Smith who has a secret. He has two wives in two separate houses on opposite sides of London, and he's got to keep his life straight. So Run for Your Wife at Beef and Boards Dinner Theater now through February 7th. I'm not sure I would recommend that as a pre-Valentine's date, though, because
skip that one. Hey, if you're listening to us Saturday morning, I apologize, but if you're listening to us Thursday night, please know that the Center for the Performing Arts is doing a really cool promotion on Friday the 29th, and it is from 10 till 3 p.m. in celebration of their fifth anniversary. For 5 hours only, you can get $5 tickets for any of their Center Presents shows that still have tickets left, and it's very, very cool. Of course, there's some limitations, but this is a great way if you want to get a whole bunch of, go to a whole bunch of shows at the Center, or if you've never been, and you can sample it this way. $5 tickets between 10 and 3 on Friday the 29th. You need to go online to thecenterpresents.org. You could also call their box office 843-3800 to get more information.
This Sunday, the Icarus Jazz Ensemble is doing a concert for free at 6 o'clock at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. They're up about 60th and Meridian Street. And they're billing it as an early Mardi Gras celebration. So Icarus Ensemble, which does a lot of, I call them a jazz ensemble. They're basically jazz groove, but some crossover into classical and pop and folk and world music. And they write a lot of original stuff and do cool arrangements as well. The Icarus Ensemble this Sunday at 6 o'clock, St. Paul's Episcopal Church, 6 to about 7:30. Get in the mood for Mardi Gras. It's just around the corner.
Cool. Hey, Book Mama is the great little bookstore out in Irvington, is having some fun events coming up. On Sunday at 2 o'clock, this Sunday, the new release of Indianapolis Then and Now with authors Nelson Price and Joan Hostetler and photographer Gary Chalufo will be out there with the new edition of the book and signing it and talking about it. That's at 2 o'clock at Book Mama's. Also, Book Mama's is holding a author's fair for self-published authors in February. You need to go to their website or give them a call to get more information about how to be a part of that.
Absolutely. Hey, last thing I have, this Saturday, the Art and Soul Kickoff at the Indianapolis Arts Garden, kicking off a month's worth of Art and Soul celebration. Check it out online at indiearts.org. Get all the details.
Very good. And, of course, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next weekend on
What'll We Do? Football Free.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Marion University Theater is presenting 12 Angry Jurors this February. Travis DiNicola spoke with Ben Tebbe, the director of the theater program, about the show.
Ben, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thanks. Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Happy New Year.
Yes.
Marion University Theater keeps doing some really interesting stuff. You've been the director there now how many years?
Going on 4 years.
Okay.
Going on 4 years, yeah, and chair of the theater program this is my second year as chair of the program.
And it's been growing, right?
It has been growing,
yeah.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the department before we talk about the show.
Sure. As a department, we are growing. We're seeing more and more students get involved in our program. Just as an example, you know, I've taught an acting class, and we've had a couple students per semester for the acting class. All of a sudden, this semester, I have a full class at 10 students, so it's exciting. We're a growing program. We have scholarships available for students who are interested in committing to our program. We are a minor only. We don't have a major in theater, but we do have a commitment to doing some interesting work, and you certainly get a hands-on education in all aspects of theater, which I find to be pretty important. I think, you know, a student who wants to be an actor or a technician, having experience on the other side of the curtain is always important.
By all aspects, costuming, props, sets, lighting.
All aspects. And our students get involved in a serious way with all of those. We have student designers for some of our projects. We actually are, as a department, I took a few students with me just a few weeks ago up to the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival, ACTF.
Which is the big college theater
festival.
The
big college theater festival. Yeah. I had a student participate in the Irene Ryan Acting Scholarship program, and she performed admirably with her partner. and a student present her costume design work that she did for Little Shop of Horrors last fall.
Nice.
And she also, the student who's our designer, participated in, they have a design storm competition as part of the festival,
mm-hmm.
where students get together and sort of have free reign to come up with a concept of a show. And her group won, which was really exciting. She participated as the dramaturg and scenic designer for a concept production of Richard III.
Uh-huh.
So, so our students are doing well. We're getting out into the world and doing some interesting things.
It seems like, and obviously you're here to talk about the theater department, but Marion as a whole just seems to be doing a lot of great stuff. I mean, whether it's with medical programs or the football team or theater, I mean, you guys are really growing out there.
We are on the move. I don't know that that's our slogan anymore. That was sort of the phrase for a while. Marion's on the move. And making history, and it's true. I mean, it's a growing institution. You walk down the hallway and look at the human resources call board, and there's about, I don't know, 15 open positions right now.
Hmm.
We continue to grow.
It's got
to
be exciting.
More students every year. We just won our second national football championship, and we've only been had a team for 9 years or something like
mm-hmm.
that. So it's an exciting time to be part of the campus. It's vibrant.
That's very
growing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it was always sort of a well-respected but kind of sleepy college for a while, and now it's a university and is really making efforts, it seems, in many ways.
Yes.
And it's great that theater is a part of that. I mean, you guys have such a great theater building,
mm-hmm.
such a great space. Civic Theater used to perform there quite a lot, but that's such a great asset for your students as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And we still, it's still used by community organizations.
Mm-hmm.
We basically have a few, what I would, not officially resident companies, but
mm-hmm.
Indianapolis Men's Chorus performs there on a regular basis, Christian Youth Theater, and of course Bob directs, who will be coming back this summer with Billy Elliot, the musical, as an Indiana
awesome.
Premiere. So I give a quick plug for Billy Elliot, the musical coming up this summer at the Marion University Theater.
So let's talk about 12 Angry Jurors coming up in February 26th and 27th. So this is a student production?
A student production. This is our department. Department of Theater Production, yes.
So tell me about the play.
Well, the play is, many of your listeners may know it better as 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
There was, the movie in 1957 made famous with Henry Fonda.
Mm-hmm.
The play was actually written as a television play in 1955 or 54, adapted for the stage in 55, and then Henry Fonda made it famous in 57.
Okay.
But in 12 Angry Men, or Jurors, a jury retires to deliberate the guilt or innocence of a teenage boy accused of murdering his father. And if he's found guilty, the death penalty is the only option.
Mm-hmm.
And at the outset, 11 jurors are absolutely 100% convinced that this boy is guilty. And there's one man or
holding
woman
out. Mm-hmm.
Who says, I'm not so sure. I think we need to talk about this. And that's the play. It sounds simple, and it is, and yet it's very complex.
Now, was it originally written for just a cast of 12 men?
So now,
obviously, by having 12 angry jurors, they're not all. It's
they're
not
all
gender
not
specific.
All men this time.
Okay.
Yes, and that was an option made available. Like I said, when it was adapted for the stage,
mm-hmm.
the same man who adapted the original teleplay for the stage
originally
just for men again. Since made a script as well. There's one called 12 Angry Women. You can do it as 12 Angry Jurors, so it can be a mixed cast.
Oh, okay.
And we're, of course, choosing that option since we it's for our students.
Yeah.
We want to involve as many people as we can. So
for something like this, Ben, I mean, 12 Angry Men, the Fonda film is of course very well known, though maybe a lot of you, the younger students, maybe haven't seen it before.
Right.
So do you have them watch it? Is that part of the process, or do you have them avoid it?
I didn't specify whether they should or shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if a student wants to go out and watch it, they can. And I don't discourage it, but I don't necessarily say I think you should go watch this.
Yeah.
I leave it up to each student, really, mm-hmm. whether or not they want to do that. And there are several versions out there. There's also,
sure.
of course, the 97 version with Jack Lemmon and
yep.
Ossie Davis and some others. So, I don't know that. I think I've heard a couple of them talking about
mm-hmm.
that maybe they've watched at least pieces of it. So
sure. Sure. Yeah, I mean, some actors are different that way, you know, love to see what other people have done before, and others are like, I don't want to know anything. I just want to totally interpret it on my own. So, I mean, you must have some good discussions in the rehearsals of this just about the legal system and, you know, and what how that functions and what that means and trying to get consensus in this way.
It's one of the reasons I chose the play. I felt like it was a great platform for educational theater. In all the good connotations of educational theater, when I chose the play about a year ago, and at that point we were, you know, 6 months into cases like Michael Brown and Eric Gardner and the grand juries involved with that, and you know, to be fair, a grand jury and this kind of jury are two separate things, obviously, but it made me think of this play, and I hadn't read
it. But
it
seems very timely in some
ways.
It's
very timely, and the script really stands up for being 60 years old. The script reads as if it could be contemporary.
I mean, the legal process is essentially,
and some of the issues that it raises within our criminal justice system, I think, are very timely. I mean, you know, and when I chose the play a year ago, I couldn't have imagined that there'd be a hit Netflix show called Making a Murder that yeah, exposes some of the same types of, you know, and the show has its own good things and bad things about it, but some of the things it exposes about the potential for an officer or law enforcement to maybe get tunnel vision, and not any type of intentional or intentionally hateful way, but that can happen.
Sure.
And there's certainly a racial component to this play. We know that the boy he's referred to as an other or those people. It's never explicitly mentioned what race the boy is or what ethnicity the boy is, but we know he's an other. And that's certainly a big component of what's happening in our society right now. And I felt like it was an important place to explore.
Is there anything specifically in the play that sets it 60 years ago, or what have you chosen to do to either look at it historically or put it in a contemporary setting?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, by casting it co-ed, it would take it out of the 50s. In 1950s, it would have been all white men sitting on a jury, and that's not the case anymore. The script doesn't have a whole lot that confines it to a certain time period, which is a great thing. I also didn't want to necessarily set it in 2016.
Okay.
So the costumes, it's sort of a an analogous time period, if you will. There's a, because the backdrop of this courtroom is much older. You know, you look at some of our great judicial buildings, and they were built a century ago anyway. So they would have had that age, which I think is an important backdrop to what the script is telling us. It's our democracy. That's our backdrop. That's what we're talking about and trying to enliven. And we will keep the costume sort of rooted in the 1950s, but not all specific to the 1950s.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, that history, as you talk about it, I mean, the process of democracy, again, that doesn't really change, and the history is behind it. But yeah, I was very curious, like, you know, is it going to be obviously set in a certain time period, either then or now or what have you? But it seems like it's a little bit more open.
So we, you know, the columns the columns in the courtroom or in the jury room setting takes us back 100 years, and the costumes take us back 60 years, and yet the people on stage and the faces you see are very much contemporary, and I like that spectrum.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the actors that are in it. The students that are in this, they all audition, I'm assuming.
They all audition. They come and perform a monologue for me and then read from the script, and I've got a great cast. I've got some students that have been in pretty much every show I've directed there at Marion so far. And I've got a few students, so this is their first time coming out. And in fact, one of the young men playing the juror number three, who's the last holdout, if you will, saying the boy is guilty, is a first-time person on stage, and he's doing a great job. So a full spectrum. both men and women on stage, mm-hmm. One African-American actor on stage. So it gives that contemporary feel while still rooting it to an earlier time period.
Excellent. Hey, while I have you here, Ben, I got to ask you, because you've obviously done a lot of work in theater here in Indianapolis. Do you continue to get a chance to do that, or...
I do very rarely. I do. I'm a founding company member of Heartland Actors Repertory Theater, and so we perform the free Shakespeare out on White River State Park each summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to still act in that this past summer, and hope to again this coming summer. I know the title, but I'm not sure if it's public knowledge yet, so I don't want to say. I'll have Diane Timmerman give you a call. I still get to take part in that. I no longer have time with a full-time job to...
You're a little busy.
Take another full-time job acting at IRT or Phoenix or something like that. But
sure.
Hopefully one of these days I'll be able to juggle both.
Do you go out to see other theater with your students?
I do occasionally. I've taken them down to IRT a couple of times and Phoenix and in fact we are organizing a Marion University night out at the theater with Civic Theater right now up in Carmel for their production of Doubt.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That's a great script.
Yeah. So I encourage my students to try to get out as much as possible and see things.
Excellent. Ben, thanks so much for coming in to Art of the Matter today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Travis DiNicola with Ben Tebbe, director of the Marion University Theater Program. 12 Angry Jurors will be presented by Marion on February 26th and 27th, and you can get more information at marion.edu. Remember, that's spelled marian.edu. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I will take a look at a big new book collecting a whole bunch of old Indiana maps.
Cool. I'll chat with Kurt Meyer about his latest novel, and we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.